Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It is Monday, March 20th, 2023. We're so glad to have you joining us on another podcast. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. Do you guys ever remember that movie Broadcast News years and years ago? That's what it felt like, where they're running through the hallways with this tape and trying to get this out back in the before everything was digitized. And they're running through there, and I got to tell you, it felt like that. I just got off of a conference call driving home from Austin. I had some business in Austin early this morning. I had to drive back for the podcast, and I pulled in my garage, was finishing up this podcast, and just a few minutes before we start the podcast, I raced into my office to get things going, and it's just been one of those mornings where you go, everything's going fine, we're going live, it's good, but man, chaos. I felt like that duck. It looks calm on the surface, but there's a lot of activity below the surface to get us to go live. But anyway, I'm so excited. We got this. No, we'll talk about our sponsors. We got all our sponsors. I'm going to start off by Finastra. On Wednesday, we've got a webinar that we're doing on for Finastra. They've asked me to put together a group. And so we put together this, get this, Shashank Shekar, who you guys have heard me on this podcast, Gabe Mitten, probably one of the foremost technologists in our industry, and along with Jeffrey Palermo, who is not known to the mortgage industry, soon will be, because we're going to be bringing him on and talking about this. And we put together a program on ChatGPT. And this we're going to be talking about with these technologists and the vision that I have and that Shashank has. And we're doing a webinar with this. And we were talking about this while I was driving home. It was so exciting. I want every listener to make sure you get an invitation to this webinar that Finastra is going to be doing. And it is going to rock. They sent it out to 18,000 people. And we're excited to be working with Finastra on this. I kind of put it together. I want you all to listen to it, whether I listen to it live if possible, and then get your questions in, or at least get a copy of the recording. We'll make sure you get a copy of the recording so we can share it with all our listeners. This is going to be one of those discussions. ChatGPT is one of the fastest growing, most Googled topics out there. And we're going to be listening to what it can do and what it can't do. And just listening to Gabe and Jeffrey talk about what in the area of servicing. Already, Gabe Mitten is using ChatGPT to measure the personality or the mood of the person that is calling in to the call to their service centers. And what this opens up, folks, we are entering into another realm of technology. While we're looking at Rome burning, it feels like it at times. Interest rates, we got a nice recovery. We're going to hear from Matt here just a little bit. Got a nice recovery going on interest rates. At least it was earlier. Yeah, it looks like we still got a recovery. Looking at my MBSLive.net screens behind me. And we got some good things going on. Again, a nice little recovery. We'll see if it lasts, get the updates and all that. But behind that is, again, the underpinnings of probably one of the healthiest mortgage most bullish reasons to be bullish about the housing market ever. And that's out there because you look at the Gen Zers and you look at the millennials that are wanting to buy homes. And we are at 28%, 29% home ownership rate, where that group should be around 60%. So we've got a huge upbeat. Okay, yeah, got housing inventory. Yes, we've got affordability issues because of rising interest rates. So anyway, we got to be looking for those exciting things that can be happening. So Finastra, one of our sponsors, is posting a real exciting webinar on Wednesday. Make sure you ask me, text me. I'll get you an invitation, and we'll put it in our show notes. Ben, we'll make sure he puts it in our show notes for this podcast. So A lot of exciting stuff coming up. Then let's talk about Candor, another technology firm, one of the best out there at automating your underwriting system, but more than just automating, it does so much to really right-size your workflow so operations can be operated in the most efficient basis possible. They say, we right-size your operation for the last time, because if you use our technology, you're going to be in a place where you do not have to constantly be hiring and letting go and hiring. It's that this roller coaster ride that the mortgage industry has been on. And I don't think that's going to be going away, although I think we do have a real exciting one future ahead of us. Let's also talk about Total Expert and what they do. They have the purpose-built CRM. That's a customer engagement platform. The key word is engagement. Now, we just released on March 15th, this last week, the interview with Joe Wellew. You have got to listen to this interview because he, too, gets into talking about what ChatGPT is doing. They're sending a whole team out to the Bay Area to meet with the folks at ChatGPT to see what's happening. So it's a very must-listen-to podcast. Again, and we got to find things that we're excited about. I guess I'm always excited. I see the future, and I see it coming up roses for us in spite of all the current challenges we got going on. So Total Expert interview, go back and listen to it. That was released last week, March 15th. Well, then also Simple Nexus, they have their software and technology for the modern lender. What they're doing, quietly picking up all these companies behind the scenes, and they're adding so much vision and technology that's affordable. You know, the technology, yes, it's death by a thousand cuts, but if it pays for itself and it brings efficiencies such as Finastra does, such as Candor does, such as Total Expert does, such as Simple Nexus does, then it starts making sense. So anyway, we also released recently an interview on March 8th with Andrea Lightfoot. It is one of those ones you will love. Also, a special thank you to the Mortgage Bankers Association. Man, they're doing yeoman's work right now with all that's going on in the industry. We'll talk more about that. We'll hear about the MBA Mortgage Minute just in a minute. And we also then have Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. These two co-ops do such a great job. They just had their winter conferences. They do such a great job of bringing together lenders and vendors in a more intimate setting where you get to see and hear from your peers. Not like the big conference of the MBA. Now, you should go to those, but you need to be paying attention to what Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative does. I just edited out what the Mortgage Collaborative is doing, is they have MCU, Mortgage Collaborative University, and the training that they're doing, it is really exciting. Also, we have KnowledgeCoop, which is a great learning management system, as well as Mobility MMI and Modex. Both of these are technology tools that look at what loan originators are really doing. You can hold people accountable for what, you know, if you're looking to recruit people, find out what they've actually done, not listen to what they say they've done, but actually go see what they've actually done. And this is what I get excited about, how you can use Mobility MMI and Modex to select the right markets to go into that match your strengths. So powerful. And then also mortgage advisory tools. So much to talk about. Thank you to all of our sponsors and our regulars who are here each and every week. My co-host, Mark Helm. Good to have you joining me again, Mark. Appreciate you.
Glad to be here, sir.
You bet. And then, we've got Les Parker, Matt Graham's live here with us. We got Anna DeSantis, Alice Alvey, and we've got the whole crew coming in hot and live and ready for it. We got Alan just dialed in on the mortgage tech update later on. So I don't think I left anybody out. Let's get into listening to we got Shashank. It's going to be released that interview for Friday. Shashank Shekhar, Insta Mortgage, and talking about GPT. It's a little bit of a glimpse of what is going to be the future looks like. So listen to that interview, and then we're going to be doing a webinar. We'll talk about, you'll listen about that on you'll listen to that in the podcast we released on Friday with Shashank. So upcoming this week, we've got Stacy Wider of the Mortgage Collaborative. We're going to be releasing the MCU, the TMCU education. Really exciting stuff. So, all right, let's get into what the MBA has for us with Adam DeSantis. Adam, thank you so much for producing this and sending it in to us. What you got?
Hi, I'm Adam DeSantis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, FHFA announced a 90-day delay in the effective date of the new LLPA for certain borrowers with debt-to-income ratios above 40%. The new effective date will be for deliveries on or after August 1st of this year. In addition, lenders will not be subject to post-purchase price adjustments related to this DTI ratio base fee resulting from post-purchase quality control reviews for loans acquired by the GSEs between August 1st and December 31st of this year. FHFA also stated that during this time, they intend to remain engaged with the industry to address operational concerns. MBA appreciates this delay, but is disappointed that the statement did not recognize the need to consider alternatives to using a DTI pricing adjustment. A DTI-based LLPA is unworkable and should be removed. Our primary concern continues to be the adverse impact of the fee on the consumer experience, and MBA is disappointed that the announcement does not propose alternatives to ease the negative impacts on lenders and their customers. In any case, the extended effective date allows for the necessary time to reconsider this policy, and MBA will continue its ongoing engagement with FHFA to push for the elimination of the DTI-based LLPA to look for an alternative solution. And finally, we're nearly a month away from MBA's annual Technology Solutions Conference, which takes place in San Jose, California on April 2nd through the 5th. For more information and to register, visit mba.org/tech. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Good job, Adam, to thank this. Appreciate the MBA. Appreciate you, Adam, for all that you do for us. Yeah, we're going to get some commentary. I'm looking to Alice to get commentary in where we start discussing some of the things that they talked about with the LLPAs. Really interesting what's happening there. But let's get over it. First, I'm really interested in what's going on in the markets. We're looking at the bank failures. We're looking at all that's going on, the potential bank failures, the ones that have happened, the big three. And then what else is happening? You listen to Credit Suisse, what's happening this morning or over the weekend. Again, where are we heading? Well, let's see if Les Parker has some insights for us with TM Spotlight. Les Parker, here you are.
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
So this is what Joe meant when he said that Gov would spend. And now it's time to insure deposits of all banks right to the top. Who yelled, protect all deposits? President Biden, Treasury Secretary Yellen, and the Fed did. Uncoincidentally, the mega banks who just borrowed money from the new Fed emergency line of credit deposited some of it in First Republic Bank. By the end of the week, markets rejected the growth in moral hazard. Meanwhile, mortgages nervously wonder, will the Fed cut rates by the end of the year? Fed's just the same as it was. Now, don't you understand? The Fed's never changing what it is. These views are my own. Discover it's time for change at tmspotlight.com.
Oh, that's good, Les Parker. Gary Canterbone and Les Parker teaming up to give us a great segment. That's really good. Everything good. The bailout of the banks. I mean, come on. Are you serious? Bail out everything. We are setting ourselves up for a precedence that is just insane. Anyway, don't get me started on that. Let's get over to Matt Graham. Matt, so good to have you here. I'm dialing in from sunny, warm, I'm sure, Portland, Oregon. Maybe not so much.
It's a veritable tropical paradise, as usual.
Veritable tropical paradise. Oh, I appreciate you, Matt. Your humor is just wonderful. It's delightful. So what's going on, Mark?
You know what's not funny, Dave? Another run on banks and bigger banks and more serious contagion that may have transpired if the government did not come up with this special assessment plan to, quote-unquote, bail out other banks, because we're already talking to so many people that have pulled out so much money and moved it between institutions just in search of safety and security. And I shudder to think what would have happened to liquidity in the mortgage market and just the banking system in general if depositors that were over, you know, 250 grand didn't get protection. I'd heard over the years past, after, you know, 2008 anyway, that the 250K thing was largely symbolic, and that if it push came to shove, that depositors that had actually put cash in the bank would get it back. You don't really want to go forward in faith on such things, but lo and behold, here we are. And
here we are.
For whatever it's worth, the Fed is not printing money to do this. They're just lending par value on securities that are actually already exist. and the Treasury is not increasing the burden on taxpayers to do it, as far as I understand anyway. I'm not an expert on it. My understanding is that there's a special assessment on banks and that banks will end up paying for any shortfall in the FDIC portion. But investors and bondholders still get shafted.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's the mark to market on the securities and the bonds that they're holding. That's when if we keep raising interest rates, which just it sinks the value of the securities and the investments that they're holding. So you always bring out such a good point, and that's why I love talking to you, and I love your screens behind me. It's the point counterpoint, Matt, and that's why I'm grateful to have you in my life. And on our podcast, because you do bring.
I'm always happy to argue with you anytime you want.
well, you do it, but it's not just an argument. There's a lot of intelligence behind it. So and we could go into this. We don't want to get into. We try to avoid our best politics.
Yeah,
out of politics these days. It's there. It is ideologies that are all over the map. So anyway, but
I think the point you're hitting on is that there are two sides to many important issues. And sometimes if we examine those two sides and give them both some respect, then we can maybe get to the heart of the matter better than just, coming to it with a preconceived notion. Not saying that that's what anybody's doing here, but just in general, in my approach to market analysis, I like to consider the points and the counterpoints. Speaking of that, let's get into market.
We've got
a job to do.
Yes.
So last week ended up being fairly anticlimactic in the sense that we had initially been waiting for CPI, the Consumer Price Index, to give us that big update on inflation. And that was especially true before the banking stuff started going down. But even after it began, there was still some hope that CPI could make a comment in one direction or the other that would tip the scales for Fed expectations this coming week. As it happened, CPI did come in just slightly hotter at the core level, but not enough to cause any major reaction. In fact, I was surprised to see just how light the reaction was, and it really reinforced the fact that the market is waiting on the edge of its seat to find out if there's going to be a banking crisis right now, or if we're just dealing with a couple of banks that happen to be either poorly managed or make some unfortunate decisions that were not able to weather the storm of a rising rate environment. Credit Suisse went down on the 15th, and that sort of reinvigorated the concern over banks. And my headline was, Dave, you know the signs on the factory floor that says you have gone X number of days without a workplace accident,
and you want
that sign to get bigger and bigger, right? So
as
of Monday morning or Tuesday morning, right, you have gone 2 days without a systemic banking flare-up. And then on Wednesday, that number was reset to zero. And the closer that number is to zero, the better it has been for bonds. And the more that number goes up, the worse it is for bonds. So the Credit Suisse flare-up, right, it reset it to zero. And we've pretty much just been waiting to see if another shoe will drop, hoping to maybe make it to Fed Day on Wednesday this week to see how the Fed is going to process all this, because this is the most interesting Fed announcement I could imagine, more interesting than anything we've had since the pandemic, because this is the first time where they really have a decision to make and where the market doesn't really agree on what they're going to do. You have some very big trade desks calling for no hike. And then you have some other people saying it would be crazy if they didn't hike. They have to hike by at least 25 bips. Otherwise, it sends the market into a different kind of frenzy.
Yep.
So we need to remember that they have multiple tools beside the rate hike itself. So whether they hike by 25 bips or not, it will depend on what it is accompanied by in terms of the dot plot primarily. And that just refers to the Fed's rate hike outlook, their forecast that each member submits. We can be fairly certain we're going to see a change in those. And I think some Fed members will cut their outlook and some will keep it the same. And the market's going to learn a lot. And I think the market's going to learn that the Fed is a lot more bearish on rates than the average market participant, given that financial markets are now pricing in more than 1% less, almost 2% less at times. On the end of year rate hike or rate outlook. So heading into all this, we were up at 5.6, give or take, on the December Fed Funds futures. And at the lowest rate levels, we were 3.6 last week. Right now at 4%, which is still way off the highs. But not too much change for next or for this week's meeting. And, you know, roughly 60, 70, 80% chance, depending on how you want to crunch the numbers, that they will go ahead and hike 25 bips. So then we're focusing on the dots and on Powell's press conference and seeing what the Fed has to say about, you know, is this contained? Is this something they're worried about happening elsewhere? And no matter what Powell says, I don't think the market's going to rule it out. And as long as the market's not ruling it out, then there's not a ton of upward pressure on rates. But the longer we go, the more that little placard counts the days up without a workplace accident, the more rates can sort of gradually drift back up.
Yeah, that's what I love. You and Bill Corbett, one of the guys we're going to add to the podcast at some point in time, have got these masters of subtlety. Les Parker just joined in. He dialed in because, you know, anytime he hears something and I see him join in, so we got to get his commentary. Les Parker joining in the discussion. Thank you for doing so, friend. How are you? What's your thoughts on all this craziness?
Well, I'm not as good as Eeyore. Able to say it so clearly, but yeah, Matt always does a great job of assessing how the market's viewing. It's when he swerves into policies and opinion on policy, we've got to maybe have the other side of truth, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what I love about right point counterpoint all the way through. But what I love about
there
you two is you respect each other so much. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you have to because neither one of us are people that move markets. So if you're trying to assess
smart guys
what's
with opinions
going to move a market, you've got to look at a neo-Keynesian view like Matt tends to look through, or you have to look at more the Austrian school or the fiscal policy that Cochrane pushes, you know, different views. And I'm probably closer aligned to Doug Duncan than Matt is. But it's not far off. So anyway,
no.
The issue is we are creating moral hazard anytime we do these things and come out with these type statements. SVB was a unique situation in that it was heavy, I mean, multi-million dollar deposits, hundreds of millions of dollars deposits. Two startup biotechs, that was the bulk of their contributions. Should those people have to wait for their money some? Yes. And are there ways that you can, because they had to go ahead and close them because when they did the bond sale, essentially it dropped their capital down to zero.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to do something. The issue is how you do that. So it's not that there shouldn't be action. There needed to be taken action. And I think there was a view, which I thought Matt articulated well, that, okay, we'll go ahead and do this, but the net effect is a small amount, you know, a few billion maybe at the most, versus the other effect of if it would have gone the way I want, would have still ended up with the same type of couple billion, but instead of it being out of the FDIC, even if they're going to do a special assessment of other banks, it comes out of depositors, or it could come out of those depositors. So it's a matter of who you're choosing as winner and losers here, and that's the problem with a capricious government. And we have a capricious government more today than we ever have, and that's the problem. Who's going to be the winner? Who's going to be the loser?
Well, it's a discussion. It's always fun to get into, and I would love to dive into it. But let's get around and get everyone. But, Matt, first of all, I'm grateful for you. It's at so many levels. You know, we tease you about the Eeyore sound at the time, but the brilliance that operates behind there. And it's so wonderful to have to get these different viewpoints on it. Les and Matt, you guys are both brilliant. Thank you so much for being here and contributing to this. Let's get Mark, and then I want to get around to Al, see if she has any questions, and the regulars, Mr. Kittle, get questions in on any of this. Again, more questions rather than commentaries, because everyone's got noses. Everyone's got an opinion on this thing. It's less into that. It's more like the questions of these two. So, Mark, any questions you have that you want to enter in this discussion?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, mine is kind of a question to both gentlemen, and I was going to make a comment right before Les joined on, and he solidified that I was positively going to make a comment from making his comment. So, it's not about necessarily your economic thought policy and who you pair up with and what kind of theories you use on it or whatnot. To me, it's just that, you know, our country – The basic premise of our country in many respects has been to have a laissez-faire type involvement where the government just should stay the hell out of things to some degree. Now, granted, if the government would have jumped in back in the 30s, maybe we'd have never had to run on the banks back then. But what I'm concerned about is the precedents we're establishing when it involves banks who have done something speculative and or haven't followed the rules or not managed their portfolios well. And I think I can talk about all three banks and find something in each one of their categories that fits what I just said there. So then we technically are reinforcing, insuring, et cetera, for lack of a better term, people for not doing a good job. So I don't have a problem with what was done, but I think the wording should not have been, we're here to save you, as much as it should have been, we don't want to run on a bank, so we're going to support this, because I don't want to see this as a common occurrence going down the road, because people got to stand back and realize the banking system stands on its own, and one or two banks are going to fail every once in a while. And, you know, I know the people in the country are hard to understand that, but I understand that, and we have bank failures every year. So I just wish people would get smarter and not be dependent on the big picture stuff. You know, it's more of a statement than a question. So I guess I'm asking Matt and and Les, how do you feel about that? I mean, the question is, we have now established a precedence. Should we build some new rules around this so that we're just not floating out there supporting everybody that makes a bad decision and bailing them out? Or, you know, what's the way we're going to handle this on a go forward down the road? You know,
I agree with the way that it should be characterized in terms of we don't want to run on the banks versus this is a bailout. But as far as establishing new precedent, I can't say that I was too surprised that we saw both the liquidity facility from the Fed or the excess of $250K in the FDIC portion, because I don't view it as much as a bailout because it's depositors getting their money. And they straight up said that, hey, look, if you're a bondholder or investor, you're screwed. Have a great day. And that's the way it should be in these situations, unfortunately, for those bondholders and investors. But if you're a depositor, I mean, we have clients that have talked to us about, you know, their banking issues with SVB, and they have nothing to do with companies or venture capital or anything like that. And they weren't going to be able to meet payroll if they didn't have that deposit coverage. And that's just, you know, maybe you should bank somewhere else, but they didn't know that at the time. And I think if you have a green dollar bill in the U.S. and you put it in a bank, it's nice to know you can get it back out, even if you're only guaranteed $250,000. I think the rationale quite clearly was, if we don't do this, it gets way, way worse. And it's not about bailing out the bank. It's like you said, it's about preventing a run on other banks.
It's a systemic
problem. I agree with that, Matt. But you know, the fact still remains that when they developed the used to be $100,000 limit, that might predate some of you guys on the phone. And now it's $250,000 limit. Well, you know, that really, it was kind of inferred, like when it was developed, this protect the small guy, the guy that really has the small deposits. There's never been really anything out there to protect people with millions and millions of dollars. So it's a big jump from protecting somebody at 250 to saying, all right, we're going to protect anybody, whether it's 10, 15, 20, 30, or whatever million, because it kind of tears at the reason the insurance rule was put there in the first place. I don't think an insurance program with a $250,000 limit was ever built to protect the big guys. It was built to protect most of the small guys. And I don't have a problem with that, but if they're going to insure all of it and be done with it is the way I look at it. And
that's
not
have
to worry
problem.
About bailouts.
I think the problem there is that a vast majority of the deposits in terms of total volume are over 250. Very few banks even have more than half of their accounts that have less than 250, which is, or half of their money is in, I don't remember the statistic, but I got a screenshot or a chart that I got somewhere and I'll have to pull up.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but don't the banks still have to pay a premium for that insurance?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I think they do. I'm pretty sure they do. And if that's the case, I'm advocating, go ahead and insure it. Insure it all. I mean, let's go ahead and step up and have the people that are managing those big bucks pay the price tag for the big failures if they have to be covered with the insurance, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And there's also another program that the banks can opt into where it's basically like crowdfunding deposit insurance, and it enables like up to $1 million of coverage. I don't know how it works, but I just came across that last week, oddly enough.
Yeah.
And please don't take anything I said the wrong way. I'm certainly glad that we avoided a run on the banks.
Yeah.
I have no problem.
Yeah. No, I'm not taking anything personally here. I'm all good. You're good. We're good.
I believe there wouldn't have been a run on the banks regardless. So,
you don't think so?
Ken Griffin of Citadel, another one of our billionaires out there, he came out immediately and was pretty aggressively saying we're just increasing moral hazard again. But what is interesting is there's plenty of policy thinkers that are saying, look, if you're going to continue this patchwork, you know there's 20,000 pages of regulations on banks. So
20,000.
You're looking at 20,000 pages of regulations. So, there's talk now, well, we need to have more regulation. Excuse me. The only reason SVB was missed, there's a single finger that can be point one direction, and that was the oversight by that region of that bank. Because they missed something ultra clear. This was a very clear problem that they really could have caught in probably Q2 of last year. Additionally, they also have a board of directors, and that means they failed. And I think, in FYI, this particular bank, SVB, is very much a woke bank. So they had agreed that we have to have a picture of a board that looks like America, which didn't rely upon meritocracy. So you aren't looking for the best and brightest to necessarily fit there. You're trying to fit some political agenda. And that also goes with the oversight for that region is also dealing in the San Francisco region. So you end up with mediocrity on a board, and you end up with oversight that's mediocrity, and you end up with a collapse.
Well, then you look at FTX to talk about a blend. That's we want to get into. I got some questions coming in from listeners because obviously we got a lot of people listening. Alice, I'm going to get over to you. Alan, I got a quick. I know you just texted me with a quick question. I got some questions from listeners. Great guys, this is one of them. I run secondary. I'm really concerned about this whole thing. Got one from a CFO that just texted me while we're listening to this discussion. They're saying, okay, it's interesting. You can forget the politics, get all this. How do we manage through this? How should we be managing through this? Now, that's probably more of a Les Parker question, but I want to go to you,
right
Matt.
Up my alley of how we should
I know, but I
want
to go to Matt. I want to go to Matt first.
Let me give you a quick answer on how they can manage this. First is they need to realize that we are in volatile times. As the Fed is now taking its foot off of various different things, you're in more volatility than you were pre-COVID.
Yeah, the volatility index.
In that more volatile times, the mortgage bankers need to be disciplined in understanding what their risk is, and they also need to be managing that convexity, which is not easy to do, particularly difficult to do if you're trying to use premium, and premium securities have illiquidity. So those that are not using any long options to try and manage the edges of this, that is 5 to 10, maybe 15 of your position should be managing that with some type of long volatility and not just taking the long volatility that's in the premiums that needs to be in options. That's the short of it, long and short of it.
I get a lot of people are writing in right now just saying, I love this discussion. Matt and Les coming on here with Les dialing in. A lot of people are thank you for doing that. It's point counterpoint. Mr. Kittle, get over to you real quickly. Real quick thought or questions you have?
Yes, I may have a glass of bourbon earlier today than normal after this. I do want to say, I want to take what Les said with a little bit of steroids because he's right, but it's time to name names. I know the people listening here want solutions. But
yes, that's what they're looking
for. The CEO of the SVB was a board member of the San Francisco Fed, so he was overseeing himself. And that's Greg Becker, and he is, it's not rumor, he's taken off and gone to his condo in Hawaii, sold his stock 3 weeks earlier, which should have been a red flag. So where is the accountability? We're talking about solutions, but part of the solution is to have accountability for the people who are there to enforce the regulations, and that's the entire San Francisco Federal Reserve. Clean house, and look what these people didn't do. Because they're the ones who were responsible for not letting this happen.
Yep. So, Alice, I was going to tease you and come over to you and ask you. And Alice is going to give us a definition of convexity risk. I was totally teasing just to have a little fun with you, Alice. But, yeah, your thoughts as you listen to this, you're like me probably just sitting here going, this is so interesting.
Yeah, this is great. And actually, I think David's remarks are great ones to end on. And so I'm going to leave it at that.
Yeah. Alan, you had asked about the folks. Well, go ahead. You texted me the question. I'll let you ask the question, then we're going to move on into Alice's
section. You know what's the great thing? I mean, forget about the mortgage industry. Just the banking industry in a whole is what everybody's talking and interested about. So this conversation is really good. But, you know, we're skipping over, and you can call them all conspiracy theorists, but there's a lot of people talking about the fact that we are moving to a digital currency and the fact that I forgot how much cash is actually in rotation and other countries have already adopted and we're laggards, but we have private or secret programs. Biden signed something in the law at the end of last year. You hear all this stuff, right? You can't avoid it. I guess one of the questions is, you know, Les and Matt, what do you guys think about digital currency and does that have any effect on what's going on right now?
No strong opinions, just because I'm not super educated on it. I mean, I know the Fed has been talking about it for a while. You know, I as far as how it impacts everything that's going on, I don't really know much about how that would be, other than I've heard SVB and then Signature Bank were heavy into crypto, and that may have played a role in some of their losses, but. Again, you're talking to a guy that doesn't really follow that space very much.
You stick to the facts, Mr. Friday. Thank you so much. You stick to and don't wander off and sort of stuff. All right. Les, I know we're going to – well, Alan, thank you so much. There's a lot of talk about crypto, but again, what we're trying to do in this podcast is how do the – when people listening to this, listening to what's going on, watching the news, how do they navigate this? We're trying to bring at least critical thought to the – how do we manage through this cycle? And that's what we're trying to get to. Anyone else want to contribute? Otherwise, we're going to go over to Mr. Okay, wrap up the market talk.
Thank you very much, Dave, for letting me call in so quickly here. And the very practical, too, is that mortgage bankers need to, those that oversee capital markets need to demand from their heads of capital markets or secondary marketing, understandable, we'd be able to see sensitivity analysis and ask questions. Ask questions. Manage the variances. If you see something change a lot from one period to the next period, one day to day, or 1 week to a week, or however frequently oversight's looking at it, they need to ask questions. And if you don't understand it, ask it again and have the secondary people try again to explain it to them. If it's not at a sixth grade level, then Einstein says you don't understand it. So if your secondary people can't explain it in ways you can understand it, you have a problem.
Really
and
good point, Les.
Maybe on
how many people did you secondary speak to hide their own, lack of knowledge of this. Well, that's good. We could go on and on
Absolutely.
Again.
Absolutely.
Yep. Thank you, Les, for dialing in. I appreciate it always. You're an avid listener, and he's already dropped out. But anyway, and Matt, thank you so much. I do value you. I mean, we did cover the TM Spotlight, so if you want to sign up for that, go to tmspotlight.com, put in Powered for the end of the code. You get a great newsletter that's a paid version. You get it for free. And to sign up for Matt Graham's must-have service, mbslive.net. It is the best out there for just looking at the vast majority of all the information, and he provides a great spot. There's other services out there that you can augment it with, but I think Matt is a must-have right now, and I love what you do, Matt. And more importantly, I love where you come from. And thank you so much for being a part of this podcast, Matt Graham. I really do appreciate it. Check out mbslive.net. You can sign up for it by using the LOL code, stands for Licking on Lending. Thank you, Matt. I love that code. And you can get the extended trial version. I had someone who was listening to me. We were doing a conference call, and they go, Licking, what are the screens behind you? I go, it's MBS Live. And it's someone who's getting already into the mortgage space. And is that something I need to have? And I go, absolutely. This is a must have, especially in these times. So he went out and hit that MBS Live and did the LOL, and he signed up, and I think he's already signed up as a customer. So we're grateful for you, Matt. Look forward to Drive Business. I just want to make you outrageously successful at what you do.
Thanks, Dave. Have a good week.
You bet. Have a good one, friend. Let's get over to David Kittle on a mortgage update on originations. What are you hearing, Kittle? We're seeing with rates drop, we're seeing some uptick in volumes again. What are you hearing out there? Any thoughts?
Yeah, it's all positive the last week or so, right? Everybody's originations are up. I haven't heard anybody that has increased somewhat. And with rates falling a little bit, it's great and positive news. Is it going to sustain? We'll see what the Fed does. And my guess is they go ahead and do the 25 bips. I think they have to, which is what Matt said earlier. So I'm in that school. I don't think that they can change their process at this point at all, because inflation is still out there. And regardless of what's going on at the banks. So you have to take care of it.
I know it was Matt or Les that said it so well. They said if they don't, we got another conundrum on the other side of that. There's a ditch on the other side. Definitely want to stay out of that ditch. So that's true.
A quick comment about the community banks.
Yeah.
Because we have many of them, and they're all great, all of them inside the mortgage collaborative and really across the country. But this is kind of a throwback over to Mark Helm for a second, who is certainly a warehouse line expert. I don't know what happens if a particular community bank goes under and you've got loans on their warehouse line. And it's a thought. So I would be taking a very close look at whoever I'm doing business with, who's on their board, because of what happened with Signature Bank and what happened with SVB. And see where they're investing the money. 99.9% of them are wonderful and invest in their communities. But you have these outliers like the two we're talking about here. And it would be a good thing to just take a look at who you're doing business with and who's on that board.
Get to know your counterparties. It is so, so true. Mark, I want to add
a quick comment. They certainly want to know about you when they're signing the bank contracts on the warehouse line. So, a reverse mirror is order of the day.
Yep. Mark, any
thoughts
on
that? David. Yeah. That's a great point. I mean, I think that's one of the most valid points that's been made today. I mean, you need to know your bank and you need to know how they manage their company. But I got to share something with you guys that is so funny you're not going to believe this. So I decided to go in the chat GPT while we're on the phone to check out that question about, are the banks still paying a premium for what was the old FDIC coverage? And for some reason, the chat is busied out right now, okay? And I have the premium service. So it says, then it responded to a question, somehow picked up you guys talking, and it said, write a TV ad about the status of ChatGPT. So it gives you a open thing, how they say, looking at a room full of engineers working, and then it says, a voiceover begins at OpenAI. We're dedicated to bringing you the best artificial intelligence. Our team of engineers work tirelessly to make sure our chatbot is always up and running, ready to answer your questions and provide helpful insight. But the next paragraph said, the camera cuts to a shot of three engineers sitting at a table, sipping on their morning coffee. They look up and turn to face the viewer. One of them speaks, unfortunately, due to high volumes of user currently trying out ChatGPT, we're experiencing some technical difficulties. Please bear with us and check back soon for access to our chatbot.
That damn thing has a sense of humor that's unbelievable.
Goes
they're
back
busy
to,
and they're sitting there sipping on their coffee.
Yeah, I was when we were talking to Gabe Minow. This goes to well, I'll save this towards a little bit later because I'll remind me to by Gabe Minow to talk about how they're using AI and the personality stuff. But Mr. Kittle, thank you so much for dialing in and being here. It is always a pleasure, friend. Anything else that you want to share with our listening audience?
No, I'm good. I think it's been a great call today.
Yeah, this is one of those ones I just thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy it. All right, let's get over to Alice Alvey. So good to have you, Alice. This has been one of those ones, I mean, I have good knowledge of the capital markets. I have good knowledge of this. But when you get Les and Matt talking about it, and then you get Mark opining, and then you get all the Kittle jumping in on it, it's just so dynamic. It's hard not to just want to go pour a latte and listen. But
it is. It was enjoyable, and so now I'm going to have everybody switch what gear they're in their brain.
Yeah.
Now go to, you know, my points are, you know, we've got stuff going on. It's not as imminent as that, but it is definitely top of mind, which is the, thank goodness, the extension only of when we have to implement this 40% DTI loan level price adjustment.
Right.
What's disappointing, as MBA reported on, and I think the word disappointing is just trying to be politically correct. I think a better word is more is what's outrageous is that this decision was seems like it was made in a vacuum, didn't consult the industry, and still seems to be completely unaware, or at least, I'm going to say completely unaware of the real impact to consumers on a day-to-day basis who are trying to get a new loan. And that this they don't have an understanding of the day-to-day. So the idea that it's just a postponement of the DTI just indicates that as an industry, we still have a battle out there to help the regulators understand that this is not workable for most consumers. And it's not things within the industry's control. So the idea that we're just going to postpone it implies that as an industry, we have to figure out operationally how we'll get it done. Well, I can do that all day long. I mean, as a company, I can put controls in place, so you can teach people all you want. Consumers change during the loan process. Lots of things change that they do, things that are beyond everybody's control and can impact a pricing change like this multiple times throughout the loan process. So, you know, there are many other layers to the onion problems with this, but I think the one to focus on is how difficult it will be for a consumer to understand their financing and their rate after we work so hard trying to get it right up front and keep it consistent for them. So, so to layer on with that, I don't know, did you want to talk about the 40 DTI more than that?
No, I think, Mark, did you have a question on that? Anything you wanted to add in, layer in on?
No, I'm fine.
Okay, good. Now, to keep on going, Al. Keep on trucking.
So the second piece is HUD announcing that they're going back to their 2013 discriminatory effects rule. So I'm not so sure much of the 2020 piece was put into place or practice, but for HUD, it felt a lot more difficult. Certainly it was, because in the 2020 piece, there were parts added that now put more accountability to prove that there was a disparate impact and to have more proof involved. I'll just simplify it that way since we're low on time here. For lenders, what it means is we go back to the days of you have your data and then you have to go back and look at it to see if there was implied discrimination against any protected class. So they're difficult things to put up front. And you now have to go back and look at your data. Did anything I cause unintentionally cause a challenge to any particular protected class? And this 40 DTI, I think, falls into that bucket of something that could, along the line, be something where you implement it as best you can, but then when you go back and look at data, now it's one more layer to identify, was everyone treated fairly in the process as a DTI is bouncing around in the loan file? Because you spend so much time thinking, I'll go with the lowest income, you know, that I can to make sure we don't have any problems. Well, now that goes out the window. I have to use the right income to make sure I don't end up charging someone who shouldn't be charged. So the combination of the two will be something we'll watch play out, you know, as we hopefully the DTI doesn't go into effect. But if it does, It will definitely play into this new position HUD is taking slash old position they're going back to. So that's my info for today, Dave.
Yeah, well, thank you much. Back to the future a little bit. How are your characters?
Yeah.
Alice Alvey, I value you so much. Been here since the beginning of the podcast, over 15 years we've been doing this together, and I value you. You're just such our listeners value and your contribution each and every week. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. Let's get over to Al. By the way, if you want to reach Al, by the way, Alice is the CMB Vice President of Education and Training at the beloved Union Home Mortgage, a home of Bill and Al, and they do a great job of running that company, and we're grateful that they lend Alice to us on this podcast. If they didn't, we'd have to come out and take violent action against them. Just joking. We love you, Bill and Al. Appreciate you. Thank you so much, Alice, being here every each and every week. Alan Pollock is dialed in with a weekly tech update and probably you were throwing in. Alan, what you got, my friend?
Well, funny enough, starting off with jokes from ChatGPT. And so, Mark, you were spot on, because some of the jokes talk about GPT being at capacity. So at first I went to ChatGPT to have them write some new mortgage material for me. And I did say, you know, please write mortgage jokes that could be used as great dad jokes. And I got the response that it was busy. So I Googled ChatGPT jokes, and there's some pretty interesting ones. Some are kind of dry. Like this one says, tell me that you hate me without telling me, quote, I am a large language model trained by OpenAI, so it does not have the ability to experience emotions, end quote. And so ChatGPT's response to that first part of the joke is, too many requests in 1 hour. Please try again later. then the next one is, please write a rap song about the status of ChatGPT. And so I'm gonna go for my most inner musical, you know,
for technology that's
skill
set. Yeah. Okay,
so
here
you
go.
This is a rap about the status of ChatGPT. It says, yeah, yo, what's up, ChatGPT fan? A lot of people trying to jam. But don't worry, we got your back. Just check back soon. We'll get you on track. ChatGPT is a place to be for all your AI chat needs. We're working hard to keep you up to keep up the pace, so hold on tight. We'll be back in the space. Yo, yo, so don't you worry. Don't be mad. We're working hard. It's not so bad. Just give us time. We'll be back. Yo, yo, ChatGPT, the future of chat. That's a fact.
It can write its own rap. I had not even thought of that application. But remember, when it comes to data, it's not been updated with anything from the internet since 2001.
Yeah.
So with nothing 2022, nothing 2023 in there, and there's a lot going on between that and that gap period.
Yeah.
So I think what it's doing right now, it's basically blocking you out because it's too busy, rather than having you wait in queue forever to get in. So that's pretty smart if it recognizes it's a capacity and why hold people out there, you know.
It is.
But more to come in ChatGPT. I will say, David, Forbes has an article about AI in banking.
Really?
And it's an interesting article. It's just called The Future of AI in Banking. It's from today, actually, 9:45 a.m. Eastern, so it's very relevant. And it talks about, you know, ChatGPT-3. It talks about how it's reached 100 million monthly active users. Anyways, what basically says, how is banking going to improve? It's no different, David, than when we had FaceMe on, right, the folks over there, and they had the digital human. I had built a digital human with them, and I had tied it into open banking. Well, what's really, really interesting is Forbes says the same thing. It's going to be great for account inquiries, money transfers, loan applications, credit score monitoring, financial robo-advice, right? Things that we do today independently of the ChatGPT model. But what they also talk about, and by the way, they get into insurance claims, financial planning, but the challenges and considerations that we all have to be very careful of is that some AI system, and depending if there's rails for the AI to live within or to run their train on, you have security, you have PII information, you have possibly decisions that aren't being validated by a human that understands certain other details. There's a lot, you know, AI can go rogue. So that's why in our industry, we've talked so much about, prior to ChatGPT, everybody was claiming that their systems are AI, right? Some of them weren't really AI, but they do what AI does, or they do a very small little component of AI. And banking is probably going to take some time, and I'm sure there'll be regulation around being able to truly just unleash, you know, your customer's information into a system that potentially can do what it wants. And we have to be very careful of that.
Boy.
Now,
yeah.
Let's talk about where we don't have that risk, right? Marketing and talking about the market and saying, hey, without giving me personal information, you may fit into this loan model. Think about it in banking, David. The ability to robo-advise that, you know, you can take your money and split it between four different accounts with three different beneficiaries and you're covered up to $1 million, right? Those are the things that can replace a human that you have less risk in. By the way, I think Mark or Matt, you mentioned earlier today, I think it was you, Matt, that there's a product out there that some of the banks subscribe to that automatically can diversify your deposits across many, it's like the crowdsourcing you mentioened.
Yeah, I think it
was. So it's called an insured cash. Yeah, it's called an insured cash sweep, ICS. You usually pay a little bit for it, but you can go to Intrafine T Work Deposits. Anyways, I will give you that link, David. You can share it out.
Yeah, send that to Ben so we get that in our show notes. Yeah, that's perfect.
Yep, but it's called an insured cash sweep ICS, and they can get you up to a multi-million dollar FDIC protection on large deposits and earn a return and enjoy flexibility. With that being said, David, I know we're nearing the time. I had some great stuff I wanted to get to, but Mark, at the end of last week's segment, you mentioned there were some things that you wanted to chat about this week. I don't know if we can make it to those questions today, but if so, I thought I'd throw it over to you and see what some of your feedback was.
Well, I'm gonna defer on that since we're so close, but I'm gonna share one thing in closing here if I could. I validated I was right. FDIC premiums are paid by the bank. I also remember this when I read it. FDIC receives no congressional appropriations. So when somebody says that we're not using taxpayer money at FDIC, the politicians anyway, they're correct in saying that. But the interesting thing is, regardless of all that, it says FDIC insures trillions of dollars deposits, and they are backed by the good faith and credit of the United States government.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
No taxes, but it's backed by. So anyway, yeah. So the banks could pay a larger premium and insure more money if they wanted to, you know, if it was available, you know.
Very good. Great point.
Great point.
All right.
And I had to do Google on that because ChatGPT wasn't working. So
it's not working because they're on a latte break. I love it. All right. So we got to get through this, some of this other stuff, Alan, because you've always got so many good updates. We are at the end of our time, and I hate to do that. But this does fit what I was talking with you. So, Alan, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. And it ties in with your background, Mark, and that is your servicing background and how – Gabe Minton was talking about how they are using our AI to anticipate or listen in and make a reasonable, intelligent guess on the mood of the customer, whether he's upset, they're angry, anxious, or whatever, and it suggests how to respond differently in a way that will create a more successful experience for the consumer in whatever emotional state they are in, angry or otherwise, whether they should be listening. We used to have a technology that did that years and years ago. It listened in to the inbound call that was coming in, and it had a 97% accuracy rate of predicting the personality type of the person and didn't get into their emotional state as much as just their personality type. And we routed the call to the appropriate loan officer that, or the intake person that had a like personality, and it created a much more successful experience. We're going to be seeing a lot more of that as you go into that. Your thoughts, Alan, and then what would that impact be, Mark? Alan?
Yeah, I mean, it's 100% accurate. IBM Watson and other ones have been doing that for a long time.
Right.
They look at the emotional connection to technology or to subject matter. So it will only get better with time, but it has existed, like you said. And I think it's very reasonable. I think it's a very applicable. I believe that we can better service our customers and, you know, emotionally know how they feel. And I think, you know, we always look at net promoter scores, at least from the technology side, and what we can do to make our customers feel better. And we have compassion towards them, and that is a good way to help.
Yep. Feel heard and connected with them. That's an important part. Mark, any last thoughts as we wrap it up?
Yeah, I'll give you some thoughts on that. That is not surprising that we've developed to that state, because being a psychologist, I will tell you that when you're talking to someone where it's marriage and family counselor and assessing a situation and whatnot, we look for certain tics that come from people, and that can be body language, it can be certain words they say, how they stress certain words and all. And part of being a good psychologist is being able to recognize those factors coming out of somebody. So if you can, you know, it's not that hard, wouldn't be that hard to take a recorded conversation and have things like that picked up on it to help you evaluate the person you're dealing with. So it doesn't surprise me, and I'm not surprised how high a process it is as percentage of reliability on predicting what you're dealing with, especially the example you used, David, with customer service. Doesn't surprise me at all. So it's just really taking something that psychologists have been doing with a notepad and recordings and looking at a person for years and putting it in a scientific manner and rational reasoning and listening to somebody and what they say. And so it's probably going to get even more intense as it goes on and be able to do more and more things.
Yeah, and that, you can find that scary, or you can find that really enabling to help create a better experience for the customer. I prefer the latter approach rather than the scarier part. And so avoid the moral hazards. Some of this we need to use, and this, it really comes down to, they say the moral hazard. We could get into that. We're out of time. I want to keep talking about this stuff. Great stuff. Mark, thank you. Alan, thank you for participating. All the others have already gone out to continue the rest of their workday. We appreciate you listeners being here with us. Again, we love your feedback. Thank you for those of you who wrote in today. Great discussion. How to manage through this was one of the best ones. Love to talk, but what do I do to manage through this? That's what we're here for, listeners, is to help you manage through this by bringing you this kind of critical conversation and thought. So good to have you here. Thank you to our sponsors, Candor, Finastra, Total Expert, Simple Nexus, Mortgage Bankers Association, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, Knowledge Coop, Mobility, MMI, Modix, and Mortgage Advisory Tools. Folks, have a great rest of your week, and we'll look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.